So we're going to start simply, because it's easier that way. A lot of you had 941, a bunch of you didn't. Whether you did or you didn't, if you hear me say something that seems different than what you were taught before, stick a hand in the air, email me, or just talk about me behind my back, whichever you prefer. There's a lot of things that have multiple sets of language or multiple sets of conceptualizations. What I'll try to do is to touch on most of those and then settle on something. You won't hear a lot of right and wrong language, because unless it's math, it's not right or wrong. It's by convention. Usually an arbitrary convention, but usually an arbitrary convention with enough history of success behind it that we ought to pay attention. Where it gets interesting is where different groups have different conventions. And the way that I'll try to remember to politely handle that is to say things like, people who like doing it this way like it for this reason. And people who like doing this other thing this other way like it for that reason. And I'll try and always be polite. So we're going to look at scatter plots. Scatter plots are probably the second most commonly not done thing that we really should do. The most commonly not done thing that we really should do is power analyses. And we'll learn how to do those, and you'll ignore that. That's fine. It's okay. I'll be fine. Scatter plots get blown off, and this is one of the reasons that I want to show them to you instead of just saying, hey, somebody taught you scatter plots before. Best of luck. It's worthwhile to take a couple of minutes to do scatter plots for the nonlinearity, for the data cleaning, and just to start to get an appraisal of how the variables are related to each other. It will be a long time before you can look at the output of a multivariate analysis and get it all. Okay? Not trying to be insulting. It's true. When you learn a new model, its fanciest version is not the best place to start using it. You really should start with each data set and ask simple questions and increasingly complicated questions until you get to the questions that you care about. On the way through, you have to pay attention to the fact that some of those questions aren't really parallel. And we'll make a lot today and Wednesday and Friday out of the difference between a bivariate correlation regression question and a multivariate correlation and regression question. And that'll be something very important to hang on to. Don't rush into the fancier analyses. Make sure you have your data in a pile first. So let's play. Scatter plots, a graphical depiction of the relationship between two quantitative or binary variables. Each participant's x and y values are depicted as a point in xy space. You know all of that. Pearson's correlation summarizes the direction and strength of the linear relationship. Direction and strength of the linear relationship. You got to keep those two things in mind, looking for them, consistency. Direction and strength of the linear relationship. If you've got a nonlinear relationship, you're using the wrong model. We'll both show you other models and we'll show you ways of modifying this model so that you can use it. Between two quantitative variables. Well, this says quantitative variable and this says quantitative or binary. Which of those is right? They're both right. Binary variables can, within correlation and regression models, be treated as quantitative. Not only are they quantitative, but they're interval. The reason they're interval is that the definition of an interval level measure is that successive steps represent the same difference in construct value. Well, if you've only got two values, you've only got one interval, so all the intervals are the same. It's only cheating a little bit. But it works well. Now, we'll talk about different language that we use for interpreting quantitative and binary variables in a correlation. But you can handle both, and we'll really work on that. Should always examine the scatter plot. Null hypothesis test can be applied to test if the correlation in the sample is sufficiently large to reject the null of no linear relationship between the variables in the population. We'll then move on to a linear regression formula, allows us to take advantage of the relationship to estimate or to predict the value of one variable from the other. Correlation or prediction should only be applied when the relationship between the variables is linear. And notice I said substantial instead of significant. Okay, we'll dance back and forth the whole semester about significant, meaningful. Okay? All possible combinations are there and have to be worried about. Here's an example of a scatter plot. I'm not going to spend much time on this. I expect you've seen these before. Probably this same slide. When we're looking at a scatter plot, we're looking for three things. The first is whether there's no relationship, a linear relationship, or nonlinear relationship. Correlation doesn't distinguish between no linear relationship and no relationship. You have to. And so here we have no relationship. Here we have a substantial relationship, but it's nonlinear. And here we have three different weak strengths of linear relationship. If the relationship is linear, we then worry about its direction, whether it's positive or negative, and the strength, whether it's weak, moderate, or strong. Now, one of the things that you'll get used to when you start looking at scatter plots is that almost circular correlation. I mean, you could drop six more dots in there and make it a circle. That's about a 0.6. Okay? That's a lot of correlation. We think of a 0.6 as huge, something that we would, you know, sell a friend for. Okay? And if we got it, we wouldn't just drink beer that night. Okay? But you have to remember, especially when we make that transition from correlation to prediction, just how weak big correlations are. When you're trying to say, if you've got an X value of this, you're going to have a Y value of that, you're asking for a lot of precision. And the scatter plots are a way of sort of just getting your head around why we don't predict as well as we think we should when we have correlations that are bigger than we'd hoped for. Okay? So, a lot of times we talk about the envelope instead of drawing all the dots. And so here's the difference between a strong and a weak and a perfect positive correlation. Here's a strong and a weak negative correlation and no relationship at all. We can also play this game when the X variable is now binary. Instead of how much of something, we have whether you're in group 1 or you're in group 2. Now the scatter plots change because all of the little dots have to be either above the group 1 place on the x-axis or above the group 2 place on the x-axis. But we still draw the same best fit regression line through there, and that regression line will go through the mean of this group and the mean of that group. It's even easier to plot than when you have quantitative variables. And we have the same portrayal here. Strong, weak, and perfect correlation, and what this means is everybody in group 1 had the same score. Okay? Everybody in group 2 had the same score. So for each independent x value, there's a separate and single y value. Meets the definition of a perfect correlation. Notice that the weak, here there's more variability in the two groups than in the strong, where there's less variability in the two groups. Here's negative that's strong, negative that's weak, and notice we've got the same variability and the same mean in the two groups. So just to think through this a little bit, people who have more depression before therapy will be those who have more depression after therapy. Now notice, what we're talking about is an individual's score. People who have more depression before therapy will be those who have more depression after therapy. Well, there's our variables. We're probably going to put before on the x-axis, because this is the traditional place for the predictor, the data that you can get first or easiest. And the y-axis usually gets the criterion. That's the variable you're trying to predict or you have to wait for. More depression initially goes with more depression after. That's a positive correlation. And notice the null is always no relationship. Those who study more have fewer errors on the spelling test. Study's going to be the predictor, error is going to be the criterion. The null is still no relationship, but now we're predicting a negative relationship with our research hypothesis. More study goes with fewer errors, and by implication, less study goes with more errors. Instructor isn't related to practice. Couple changes here. First of all, the predictor variable is now binary. When we say the instructor isn't related to practice, we have done something that data analysts and researchers do that statisticians don't particularly like. And that is when our null hypothesis and our research hypothesis are the same. And particularly in the late 70s and early 80s, you couldn't pick up a statistics or methods journal without a knockdown, drag-out fight about whether or not null hypotheses should ever be research hypotheses. Nearly all of those discussions are held at the bivariate level, where, yeah, in a population, if you measure enough people, measure the whole population with enough precision, it's unlikely that there's absolutely no relationship at all. Okay? The null doesn't make sense mathematically. But most of us aren't doing math. Most of us are doing theory or practice. And it might theoretically make sense to say there's not enough of a linear relationship to care about, to change our theory. There might not be enough of a linear relationship to change our practice or our behavior. And so researchers and practitioners do tend to allow the situation where the null hypothesis and the research hypothesis are the same. It does make it a little more challenging for some statistical things, because you have to make sure that you don't cheat. You want a null? Just run one person. No statistical power to speak of. You're always going to get a null. So you got to make sure when you're trying to retain a null that you don't get that null by cheating. Run a small, shitty study, you'll almost always get a null. And the way we save ourselves is that most of the time we're not interested in just that null hypothesis. Most of the time, we've got probably several variables that we're using to predict how much people practice. We expect some of those to be significant and some of those to be non-significant. Now we have to play fair, because we have to have enough power for the significant ones to show up as significant, and that will make sure that the nulls aren't just low power analyses. Make sense? It's one of the first ways that multivariate analyses save us from ourselves. We're asking multiple questions, and it can increase the fairness of all of the questions we ask, because we're now worrying about positive, negative, and zero effects all at the same time. The best thing to do is run a powerful enough study and give yourself over to finding what's really true in nature. So don't worry too much about looking for the null unless the person's looking for all nulls. And you probably don't need to do more of these.